It is Thursday, the 26th of February, and this is episode 238 of Digital Outbox. I forgot to say it's 2015. Ugh, going back on it. I am Chris, hosting in my own inimitable fashion, joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
You look as tired as I feel.
Yeah.
Good evening, Christopher.
If there was a soundtrack to this podcast, it would be tired music, like a lullaby or something.
What would tired music be?
Well, a lullaby is a good one, right? Goodbye. Enough of that. Yeah, okay, let's go. The news this week, and we're going to start with Obama the Arrogant, who came out with a statement. It was actually, I think, was it the tail end of last week, actually? Pretty much slagging Europe off for holding back American companies, and he sort of stipulated that, well, he was sort of intimating that Europe were deliberately investigating American companies to try and hold things back, to try and give Europe a bit more of a competitive angle in the internet, which he pretty much said America owned, dominated, and has won basically.
Actual quote: we have owned the internet. Our companies have created it, expanded it, perfected it in ways that they can't compete, meaning us Europeans. They, what a racist. And and oftentimes what is portrayed as high-minded positions on issues sometimes just designed to carve out some of their commercial interests. Well, that's rich coming from the Yanks.
Yeah, no. Right. Devil's advocate playing. He's got a point, as in, they're, you know, relentlessly we do try and chip away at the freedoms that the internet has and that America enjoy through that. But I can't play out Devil's Advocate much more than that, because the rest of it's just a bit annoying.
Yeah, he should remember, we owned them at one point, and that war can happen again. So don't get cocky with me, Obama.
And also, just because, you know, you have you know, no one can own the internet. Now, America have tried very hard, and they are now, you know, living in a world where they, you know, they can't have it all their own way, basically. There, other things exist other than America, and everyone has that equal right to the internet. And anyway, we invented it.
And as the article pointed out as well, I mean, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, they're not exactly companies that are shy of, and Apple as well, they're not shy in applying laws and, you know, bending the rules.
My angle on it was, you know, okay, America may be the country where a lot of these things have taken place, but it's certainly not all Americans heading up these companies. It's just a fully international thing, and he's got to accept that. Anyway, it was kind of an interesting statement. It's probably deliberately divisory. He was probably trying to do something else in the background.
And also, it's politics. So no doubt, exactly, there's a, that, you know, by doing that, he's probably got a bit of funding for the next, you know, Democratic nominee.
No, exactly. I mean, who knows what's going on in the background? As I say, there could be all sorts of different angles going on here that he, you know, he's trying to maneuver.
And you know what I say? See, for somebody in that power and position, and with that kind of ability to do what he can do, he should go back to making adverts, because he's far better at making adverts than doing petty speeches like that.
To be honest, he's pretty much at the stage now where he doesn't care anyway, so it doesn't make any difference what he does, because he can't rule their country anymore, because, you know, they're the tail end of his administration. So he can now say what he likes.
Clearly.
Which is fine. And interesting, net neutrality. It's breaking news just now, actually, that they have, the US regulator has passed the net neutrality rules, which effectively make internet providers telecoms providers in the US. And it means they're subject to heavier restrictions and regulation. And the rules now mean that they cannot, by rights, adjust speed of services based on, say, you know, arbitrary money changing hands, which we've been talking about it for years now. We've been running this podcast for, I think you said 6 years, was it? Something stupid like that. And we've been talking about it since then. And I'm quite surprised that it's passed.
Yeah, because lots of people thought this was And I mean, there's a few people tonight, and there's lots of tweets from The Verge saying that they never thought this would happen. Because even in the second point on the list here, you know, broadband providers cannot block or speed up connections for a fee. And this was something that's been quite contentious over the last sort of year, 18 months. And there was lots of people saying that, you know, when the US regulator, I think it was about a year ago, there was a kind of, Tom Wheeler. When Tom Wheeler came in, I think there was lots of people saying that's like an industry stooge being put in place. And this is the end of the net neutrality argument. He's just going to railroad it through. And he's come out in favour of it. And there was a vote tonight, you know, 3-2. And the good thing is that, I mean, there was lots of kind of prominent people at the hearing as well. You know, it wasn't just all, you know, politicians. There was lots of the tech industry were there, you know, trying to make sure and lobby for it. So
some of the arguments against were like, you know, it's good that something like a massive communication, so a massive internet provider can team up with Netflix, for example, and effectively ensure that the service works correctly on across the network. So they can say we are a Netflix supplier and they have a great, you know, chunk of data that can travel between them and maybe there's a premium on that. Problem is, it's when you get multiple companies. So like, you know, Amazon comes along and offers their movie streaming. So net neutrality enforces that. Basically, that telecoms company cannot preference Netflix over another competitor. And therefore, it can't be a money game that wins out, basically, based on, you know, on the actual... It's a bit like, you know, I guess I'm trying to think of a good analogy. You know, having a road that suddenly narrows for one company, but is left free and free, you know, two lanes left open for Netflix, whereas Amazon have to squeeze themselves down the inside lane or whatever. But that was a really bad analogy, but you get what I mean. They can't do that.
Or the way I've always looked at it, you know, buy a Rolls Royce and you can use this empty road here, but everybody else has got to use this kind of really dirty road and, you know, break their cars and all that kind of stuff. And the important point, we've mentioned broadband, this also applies to mobile as well. So it's not just the kind of fixed broadband lines. So it's a fairly historic day. And we've had one reaction already from Verizon. They said the rule has been adopted today. We're written in the era of the steam locomotive and the telegraph. History will judge today's action as misguided.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably set to lose more than most then. I think most fair-minded and sane people seem to, you know, to say it was always a good idea, but they never thought it was going to happen because the people that don't like it are the industry and the lobbyists and obviously America's strong on the, you know, let companies and let markets deal with things. And I think that's why this felt uncomfortable, because they're against any type of regulation, really. We're kind of more used to it in Europe.
Yes. Yep.
Lenovo.
Oh, dear.
Donkeys. Well, they were donkeys a little while back. Basically, between October and December in 2004, they were shipping their laptops and computer systems with some, basically, it's adware, basically, called Superfish. And Superfish was inserting itself into pretty much all the communications happening between your computer and the network, sort of effectively jumping in and pretending to be lots of different, jumping in and pretending to be the secure sites that you're accessing so they could read and transmit its ads into your content. Worse than that, it was using a common key across every single install. So as soon as someone hacked it, which apparently only took 3 hours, they could get into everywhere. So it means that there was for all these laptops that were sold with this software in it, they're pretty much left wide open for man in the middle attack.
Yep. So it was Rob Graham, CEO of Arata Security. He cracked he cracked the key.
Cryptographic?
Yeah, I couldn't see it. I just saw it and I was like, I've no chance. And but he did that in 3 hours and it was like, that's amazingly open. And so an example he said was a certificate and works against Google, even in Chrome, you know, so there was just no way you would know that somebody could be, you know, grabbing your details or kidding on to be a bank. You know, you think you've got your little key and you're nice and secure, and you're not.
Yeah, and it's, Lenovo are pretty downplaying it effectively. They're not sort of doing a recall, or they're not doing, certainly they're not sending out updates.
Well, they downplayed it initially, but after a couple of days, they then put their hands up and says, this was wrong, we won't do it again. I think they'd realised how badly they've tarnished their brand. And the tech community, I still think, for normals, I mean, I hate maybe using that, but I quite like it as well. But for normals, they won't care. But I think, you know, amongst...
They're not going to be listening. It's fine.
Hi. but I think amongst the tech community, it's just like, you know, it just questions, you know, why did you even think this was a semi-decent idea?
Yeah, they must have got a lot of money for it, because why else would you do it?
No, agreed.
Why else would you do it?
One person or one group that came out looking good was Microsoft. So they updated Windows Defender to take out the adware. Exactly.
To the rescue.
And it was only after they'd done, so I think they put this out about a day later, and then I think it was a day after that that Lenovo kind of went fully public, held their hands up, done the wrong thing. What happened again? And I saw a retweet today, and it was from the guy, I don't know if it was a journalist or if it was a security firm, who tweeted, had got in touch basically with Lenovo's PR to say, I don't know if you know about this, but here's what I've done. And they replied, thanks, I'll get back to you after lunch. and they lost $500 million that day on the stock market. So, okay, so maybe you should have, you know, dealt with that and not had your sushi at lunchtime.
That's important. You must eat.
Is that a command? Is that like, is that it?
Now.
You must eat.
More hacking.
I had a Krispy Kreme donut today. It was
lovely.
Great.
Lovely. More hacking. More food updates later in the podcast. Stay tuned. SIM cards have been hacked. So apparently spies from the US and the UK got access to millions and millions of cell phones around the globe by hacking in and getting the security keys, effectively, for these handsets from a particular company. It's the latest revelation from Edward Snowden's whistleblowing. And basically the sort of implication is that once you know these keys, you can set up a mast and you can intercept and decrypt effectively any conversation that's happening across voice and data.
Who do you believe? So that's where my head's at the moment. Who do you believe? Because the company, which is Gemalto, they've said, yep, we were hacked, but don't worry about it. Everything's secure. And you don't need to worry about it. And everybody else, so like the initial, a cryptologist at John, at the John Hopkins Information Security Institute, Matthew Green, he told The Guardian, you know, this is a big breach, problem is the attacks could still be ongoing. And so there seems to be, again, it's like any of these kind of breaches, the companies are doing their best to say, don't worry. But the independent.
Well, let's put it this way. When we first heard about all these other breaches that happened and then everything was downplayed to start with, it didn't take long to prove that it was actually a lot worse than we even understood at the start. So
yeah.
I think it might well be the same now.
Yeah. And to me, a hack, you know, of this size and scale as well, got to be concerned, because this is the kind of thing you assume is ultra secure.
I would assume, actually, more likely, they've probably got something to hide, as far as maybe they let them have this information. Maybe it was not really a hack. It was just more of a handover of data in the provisor, you know, under the provisor that they pretend it was hacked when, if it ever comes out. Is that cynical? I shouldn't say that. That's allegedly my opinion, nothing to do with reality.
I like it.
Don't hack me. But, you know, yeah. Like I say, every single thing we've heard so far has not got better with time, shall we say.
No, and I read this week as well, Snowden regrets not leaking earlier. Because I think he had quite a bit of information a lot earlier, and he regrets now not putting it out there. But I mean, what he did was, it was massively bold. You know,
he's probably faced massive repercussions for it. But the problem is that not all the repercussions we're going to be. There've been some good things come out of this. More regulation here, there, and everywhere. At least we understand the situation. But also, we're now seeing governments actually coming out and not asking permission from citizens to do these things. They are telling citizens that they are going to be doing these things. So whereas before it was a bit, you know, hush hush, didn't tell anyone, we're just doing this in the background, they're now kind of coming out with any excuse they can to put in the snooper's chart, to put this, that, the other, so that they can still gain this access But now at least it's in the open a little bit more. And that one-sided nature of it, like, we are doing this. Doesn't, you know, okay, sure, we're supposed to be accountable to you, but in these particular cases, you don't count.
And we are also seeing, you know, continually we are under terrorist threat. And, you know, just this week, you know, shopping centres, you know, shopping centres are under attack, and then we must treat this seriously. And we as just, you know, as you said, citizens, you've got no way of knowing how real and present that is.
I mean, we've been,
is just that somebody's tweeted something to somebody and they're saying, so we've got evidence that they're planning something.
Yeah, and we've been at the highest level of security alert now for, what, 5 years? And so just, you know, whatever. Poor little me, I just don't even know how much danger I'm in. Apple has announced that it's going to build data centers in Ireland and Denmark. $2 billion it's going to be investing in those two locations, pretty much duplicates of the American data center, but in these two regions. Obviously makes all this data export that's a big problem at the moment much less of an issue. Gives them more speed and availability in all these different regions, basically. In Europe, which doesn't count because we're rubbish.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, I think the big headline was all about being green, and that obviously ticks a box for Apple, and it's great PR, but it does also mean that there's a couple of data centres. It means your data is local to you, and it's not in America, or not in some other part of the world. And I'm sure that's the underlying reason for it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah.
And secondary, streaming is the future, you know, so whatever they end up doing this year with Beats, and with their iTunes music service, you know, there's a need.
Yeah, and I shouldn't really have skipped over that kind of green credentials. They've certainly, they're blazing a trail. They've got enough money to do that, though. That's the difference. They got enough money to make it all green. But it sounds quite innovative, all their kind of stuff they're doing.
Yeah, and it's amazing just how much the location makes a difference. You know, I was looking at like data center, you know, kind of heat and cost last year. It's just amazing how much, you know, even, you know, something based in the north of Scotland compared to South England, the cost difference is massive just because of, you know, local temperature and what you can take advantage of locally. And, you know, if you're, you know, five, 6 degrees warmer, the difference in cost is massive. So,
Important news, Ian. HTTP2 is signed off. This is news that won't actually directly affect you, but is actually going to, you know, every day, but is quite important in the internet terms. This is like the biggest thing since 1999.
Yeah, so 16 years. And I thought 1999 was all about millennium bugs, but clearly not.
So basically, it's an enhancement of the existing protocols plus additional parallel type processing. Basically, the reason it's not so exciting is that pretty much Google has been running off this now for probably 5 years. And other sort of big providers are also do similar kind of things. They kind of, a bit like they do with HTML5 and things like that, they kind of jump the gun, they decide they want to run it anyway, and they've got enough infrastructure they can do that. But effectively, the kind of parallel nature of this means that you should notice page loading faster, things shouldn't be blockers, all sorts of new things that happen, and it should be then rolled out everywhere. And Google have said they will move over to HTTP2 because pretty much it duplicates the protocol that they've been using for a while now.
What's the name of their current protocol?
Speedy.
That's okay, because I called it Speedy as well. And
SPDY.
I'm sure other people are going SPDY, and it's like Speedy, surely.
Yeah, it's definitely surely. Speedy.
But no, it's a good thing. And as you say, hopefully it's one of these underlying things that just changes and you know, people don't really notice, but we still have a nice fast internet.
Historically these kind of new protocol sign offs take like bonkers. HTML5 isn't signed off, I don't think so. And it won't be probably for many years. It'll be pretty much we'll be on to the next one before that one gets signed off. That's kind of how it rolls. And so we have had these technologies out there already. It's now be ratified.
Yep. But these kind of standards are really important. You know, you'll know that as a developer, trying to hit all the different browsers is such a pain.
Yeah, no, it's they're really important underlying technologies. But what I'm saying is it's really not that new. It's just it's nice that it's signed off now. Google Play, they're increasing your free cloud storage to 50,000 songs from 20,000. So If you're a big music lover, you can now store more of your tracks in the cloud without any impacting your Google storage and allowance.
And for me, that was a big deal. I remember when I first went to iTunes Match, there was a couple of my friends were annoyed at the 20,000 limit because they had more tracks than that. So they were having to, it was basically failing.
Pick and
they were
choose.
Having to choose. Yeah.
I can't possibly choose only the first 20,000.
Some people do have massive libraries.
Bet they didn't buy them.
No, that, come on. That's...
You reckon someone's bought 50,000 songs legitimately?
Yeah. You're telling me you don't know, you've not seen photos of like people with like massive vinyl collections and CD collections?
Yeah, but those kind of people won't have bought the MP3s.
No, but if you've ripped it.
That's naughty.
It's not naughty. It's now illegal in the UK.
Is it? I can't remember. I can never remember what's what. It's a bit like marijuana.
Anyway. And
can I be smoking this or not? I don't know.
Yeah, I inhaled in the vicinity. But yeah, I thought it was really good. Because again, it doesn't cost you.
Yeah, no, it's and it's a great way, because these streamers don't always have, you know, all the tracks and all the licenses. You can even subscribe to Google's music service, have all their kind of streaming tracks, and fill in any gaps they got with your own music collection.
Which is what I'm doing at the moment. So remember, I said I was trialing that service.
Yep,
it's been very impressive.
Okay, it's just quite easy to do, isn't it?
Yep, and just having that, you know, going for a run. And you don't fancy all the playlists that I've already currently made up. I don't fancy this new album. I just fancy, oh, yeah, okay, I'll have a bit of that. And it's actually working really well.
Sony.
Oh, bless.
Sony maybe being on a, you know, at the end of a spiral downwards, really. It kind of come, basically they've been handing things over left, right and center. So lots of things that are still branded Sony at the moment are actually spun off into independent divisions and even owned by different companies now. So and it looks like that's ongoing. What have they sold off now then? Because at the moment they've only got PlayStation and I think lenses, was it? Apple lenses.
Yeah, so this is their current CEO, so Kaz Hirai, and he's been talking about this one Sony, you know, so they wanted to get back to focus on their core and now so I think it's only just now that the first Vio PCs are coming out that aren't made by Sony, because they sold that PC division last year. But what they're looking at doing is he's considering spinning off smartphone and possibly the TV business.
Wow, so Sony TVs aren't going to be Sony.
Yep. And what he's looking at is the three what pillars or tent poles or whatever for Sony now are, so Sony Pictures Entertainment, so that's the Hollywood studio. Because I was talking to Shaq about this and he was like, yeah, they make great cameras. I said, no, it's not the cameras behind the films, it's the film studio he's talking about.
The actual studio, yeah.
PlayStation, so everything that is round about, you know, PlayStation, whether it's, you know, PS4 or mobile or the streaming service. And the last one is a bizarre one, selling image sensors to Apple. So Apple have basically got a lock on using Sony as a source of image sensors. And we've all seen, despite this race for megapixels, iPhones are still got the best mobile pictures right now. You know, it doesn't matter who does what. Even the big Nokias that came out with like the 20, 30 megapixel sensors and the big lenses, still side by side, people were usually picking an iPhone I'll have that picture, please.
Yep.
So they've got but because they've got the lock, because they're making the best ones, they're making a lot of profit on it. So it's almost weird, because it's like, does that really mean you're, apart from the first two, you're almost like a components company more than anything else, which you would never have thought of Sony. No. Sony was always that brand that, you know, if you think back to the Walkman and stuff, and just how they iterated.
Yeah, it was very consumer.
Yeah, and it was all these different designs and crazy products. And you know, Jobs coming back to Apple, he was like, I want to be more like Sony. And it's like, Sony's just so different now.
Maybe one Sony means one Sony product. That's it, full stop, done. But
it's almost like they've ceded that role to Samsung. You know, Samsung feels like that, you know.
I think Sony were very much always the premium, and still are the premium market, right? And maybe that premium market doesn't exist now. When companies like LG and Samsung can come up with pretty spectacular products at a lot less price, I don't know, maybe they've lost that market.
And maybe you're right, but I mean, they did do that. They've got a really high end, it's not the Pono player, but they've got a really high end Walkman for high end, you know, high res audio.
Yes.
Which I think was, what was it, £1,400?
It was something silly.
And just this week, they've brought out a memory card in Japan for £300 for like 64 gig for high res audio. And they're saying it's like some sort of special stuff in it they make. And it's like, it's bollocks. It's just, it's almost like back to the, you know, the getting suckered in for buying the gold HDMI cables. It's like, this is guff.
There's always someone's going to buy them though.
Jack.
Pebble. They've launched a new product effectively, and it's a color display. So the Pebble was pretty much the first smartwatch, wasn't it, that they got released to market. Has a lot of crazy followers. Now they've brought a color version of it. And interestingly, they decided they were going to go back to Kickstarter to release this new product. So even though really they're not a kind of Kickstarter-y type company anymore, they've grown out of that, they still went back to Kickstarter, and it garnered the response they wanted. They chalked up millions in a very short space of time.
What time is it?
Now?
No, it's Pebble time. That's the name of the bloody watch. You're rubbish.
Sorry.
Sorry.
We must rehearse things like that.
It was a bit random. But you know what happens when we rehearse something? It's just so false. It's like...
what time is it, Ian?
It's Pebble time.
Yeah.
It's more false than Madonna falling. Anyway, the... Harsh.
Yeah.
I get tempted to order it, probably just because I saw Bernie Lick with his little, I've just backed Pebble Time on Kickstarter.
There's something about it. It's caught, you know, that the best thing to come out of Kickstarter was Kickstarter, wasn't it, really? Just amazing as a, you know, as a delivery and getting people enthused about products that don't exist.
But the thing I liked about this, and it wasn't the colour screen, it was the just a slightly better design. You know, they're just...
I still don't think it's attractive.
No, but I don't think there's many smartwatches that are attractive.
No.
You know,
I don't think that's been nailed yet.
I need to stop talking about Shaq. But I said to him this morning, I was attempting to order it. He says, yeah, it's because you get a Kinder Egg with it, isn't it? You really like the Kinder Eggs. And it is a bit harsh, but I think that just sums up. It does look a bit fugly. But at the same time, the battery's 7 days or 5 days on it. And that's more important than, you know, I've got an absolutely fantastic, sexy looking watch that I need to charge every night.
Yes. No, I agree that, you know, especially as that's such a alien thing. But then again, we got used to it on phones. You know, we just got used to that charge.
No, but there's something about the charging a watch like that is just wrong.
No, I agree. I agree.
You know, that's the... And we had a bit of a kind of debate at work. You know, if the iPad had come out with a two-hour battery life, it would have never worked.
No.
You know, that 10-hour battery life was killer, even though it was kind of a bit heavier than
everybody
wanted.
And it's still amazing. Yeah, it's still even now.
Yeah, and that's where I feel... It just feels like the smartwatches are 2 or 3 years away from being, you know, what they need to be.
But it is interesting still for me that, you know, they've got how many retail partners they've got. They've got, you know, real injection. You know, they're on the high street, effectively, Pebble, but they still went back to Kickstarter. And that's what they probably made far more out of that than they would have on the high street.
No, I definitely. And the thing they kind of highlighted was they didn't need, because the original Pebble needed Kickstarter money to make. And yes, it took months to do. But with this one, they're ready to go.
No, they're just using it as a sales channel.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, for me, like I said, it goes against what Kickstarter is, yet they still used it and it was still beneficial for them to use it. So, well, you know, go for it.
Well, and I think there was some people yesterday just saying it just confirms that Kickstarter isn't, it's a shop front. You know, all
it's a clever shop front. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't buy one, would you?
No, well, no, I still don't see the point at all. No, I like my watch that I've got, and I haven't got room on my wrist for two.
But the other part of this that I really liked was the kind of way they'd done the interface, not so much the colour bit of it, but you actually go through time, so you can go, you know, forward to look at your appointments, go back to see what you've missed, and it just looked actually as if they'd spent a bit of time thinking about this.
Yep. They've got so many apps now that they're finding a nice way of effectively not having to go back to the home screen to load the new app. You could just traverse the apps that you had previously loaded. So effectively it means that you know, you're near to the apps that you've loaded or used most recently. And if there's a weird one that, you know, haven't used in ages, then you would go back to the home screen, go load it. But again, that's quite clever in that it just, you know, I mean, it's just less navigation then, isn't it, basically?
And I do think people that have actually got used to using, you know, their PayWallet at Brian, love it. You know, there's another guy at our place now, and he is like, you know, it's just like, this is, he couldn't not use it. And I'm sure that's why within 17 minutes they raised their 500k target.
Yeah, like, I'm sure it is. There's got to be something to that.
2 days gone, you know, and it's $10.5 million.
I have just said, you know, I've said before, I sit in my little office and my phone's out on the desk. There's little difference between me looking to the right and my phone and lifting and having a look at my wrist.
No, I agreed. And I think it's just for certain people. Certain things,
yeah,
it makes perfect sense. And I'm a bit like you. If I'm sitting in the office, I've just got it in the dock, and it can sit there in the dock, and it can just be popping up stuff on the screen. I don't need to do anything. And I can go, okay, Siri, understand this. And then it goes, what?
UK is getting its first esports arena next month. It's going to be a 600 capacity venue, capable of holding up to 50 gamers. It's going to be hosted in London, in a view cinema, basically. We've talked before how big business some of these sort of gaming convention events are, and you know the online gaming. I guess esports sums it up really. So it's, you know, people using games as competition, and we're getting our first one.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised it took that long.
I'm surprised we haven't done something like this already yet.
Yeah. Because there seems to be big money, and they're doing some kind of Halo stuff around Europe at the moment, and it is kind of big money. And I'm sure there's enough. You know, see when I see things like wrestling that still gets massive following, and I just think I'm surprised it never really took off.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't know. Maybe it's just getting the right. How do you make it more interesting if you're actually going to watch it? You know, compared to sitting here watching it.
Yeah, and. Yeah, it's going to be a particular audience, I'm sure. So,
and that's what I mean. You know, so like, you know, if I could just watch a live stream of it,
that's probably enough, and I'd probably get bored after a little while.
Yeah, but also I'd probably get a better experience or see it in better quality than I would sitting in a kind of pseudo cinema with lots of sweaty.
You know, I've seen the videos of them, you know, in Japan and wherever, going absolutely nuts. You know, just following on with a strategy game and sort of living with it, really, which is. You know, I guess if you're there and you're in with an audience and you can't help but getting swept up by all. That's the end of the news, but you've got a pick for us.
Alto's Adventure, out on iOS. It's an endless runner. And so you know I like endless runners.
You're obsessed.
So this is $149, no in-app purchase. So it's just buy the game outright. And it's lovely. Great visuals, great audio. I actually find it quite addictive. But I do tend to find it. It'll hook me for a couple of weeks, and then I just move on to the next one.
Yep.
And that's what I like about those kind of, you know, small cheap purchases. It's a nothing, you know. And that's ultimately what put me off the 3DS. Shaq picked up the new 3DS. Works really well. But then you see games are 35 and 40 quid,
and you think you've got to invest into them otherwise. Yeah.
And it's like I'm not going to do it. You know. So ultimately,
like the graphical style. It's nice. It looks good.
Because as soon as I played the 3DS that he bought, I was like, I'm buying one. I went on the Amazon site. He's like, no, I'll go to Nintendo site. And I was like, and I thought, I'll wait till tonight. And that was enough. By the time I got to tonight, don't buy it.
No, yeah, money, completely no objects. And you could have all the games given to you. No, why wouldn't you do something like the 3DS? But when you can have these little injections of gaming into your life without the kind of long-term relationship, it's much better. To speak. So that is the end of our podcast. I'm sorry.
It was like an episode of Black Mirror.
It was. That was great. Did you watch the Black Mirror with the duplicate person, as it were? As in the electronic personality.
Oh yeah.
Unbelievable. Love that.
Yeah, I've loved them all, to be honest.
What's that?
I've loved them all.
Yeah, yeah, no, they've all been absolutely brilliant. They've been spot on.
I don't know if I could watch them all back to back. I think I might jump out the window.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit depressing. But if you are one of the weirdos that hasn't watched any of the Black Mirror series, go dig them out because they are right up my street. They're brilliant. Very well done.
But also, for the fact that they are, you know, science fiction, quite rooted in reality.
And that's what makes them
It wouldn't take too much to...
That's what makes them so powerful.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, if you haven't watched them, go watch them. I'm sure you have though. So that is the end of the podcast. If you want to find out more about what we do, who we are, etc., digitaloutbox.com is our website. You can email us info@digitaloutbox.com, and Twitter is digitaloutbox. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK, and all my racing and stuff is on academyracer.co.uk.
When did you start? When's the season start?
I've got the official test is a couple of weekends time. Well, no, in fact, it's only not this weekend, next weekend, and then April 17th is our first weekend.
Not long.
Not long. Where can we find you?
Blog is eandee.net. Twitter is Shweepa.
Perfect. All right, then. So we will talk to you again next week. Speak to you then. Bye-bye.
Ta-da.